Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Patreon powers, this is Tim and Guy.
Yeah, you can't see it, but he's pointing at me, so he knows that I'm... So I know that he's talking about me.
You've selected a fantastic film for us today. It is Bucky Larson, which we just started, and then I said, I'm pretty sure I remember what this movie's about, and then Guy said...
Do you want to tell me about it? On mic, it's an exciting new frontier for the form.
It's a brand new segment. So I'm pretty sure I have vague recollection of recollections of this
movie. It's off to a bad start, by the way.
The film?
Yeah.
Or this podcast?
Both.
Okay.
But mostly the film.
Yeah. I'd say it's doing a worse job than we are. We're not doing fantastic, but... We won't get into that. We've only seen about 90 seconds of it. From memory, I was sent clips and some links to this from people like... was it around Grown Ups time? When did this movie come
2011.
Out? 2011. Okay, maybe it was. Yeah, because this is a Nix Woodson vehicle. And I'm pretty sure in this movie, both his parents are porn stars.
Yeah, okay.
And he finds that out like later in life. Like maybe that's one of the first things he figures out. He's just been fired from his job, folks, in the first 2 minutes.
It's a grocery bagger.
And I think he goes to pursue his parents' profession. He wants to become a porn star.
Honestly, this is not surprising. It makes so much sense to me. That feels exactly like what is appropriate for just the materials surrounding the movie.
It's a good premise.
The people involved. Is it?
Yeah.
In the right hands, it would feel pretty different. But the idea of watching Nix Woodson, you know, lampoon whilst... you know, attempt to become a porn star.
So negative. This could be amazing. This movie could be the best.
Okay, so we're about to watch Nix Woodson probably pursue a career in pornography.
I hope so. Yeah,
I cannot think of a better way to spend an hour and 40 minutes of my life. We'll see you on the other side.
Love that new haircut.
You get a lot of compliments on it. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, don't thank me. Thank the bowl.
Miss SpongeBob said I look like Brad Pitt.
Meet Bucky Larson.
Get out of here. You're fired.
Fired?
He was going nowhere.
Don't let these people get you down.
You're destined for greatness.
Until he made...
Tonight, we're going to watch nude movies.
A shocking discovery.
Is that who I think it is?
Whoa. That's your folks.
I'm the son of two stars.
We were going to tell you on your 50th birthday.
This is my destiny. I'm going to go to California, and I'm going to be a star on the silver screen. I'm the son of two movie stars. That's like a super duper movie star.
So we just finished watching Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, 2011 comedy vehicle for the great Nix Woodson. Tim's guess or memory was on the money.
Yeah, I remember there was some trailers. I'm sure I've seen a trailer of this movie at some point. Man, fucking wow.
This movie to me exists in like a pantheon of, or like a bizarro alternate universe of movies starring, you know,
Sandler's friends?
Friends and family of the Sandlerverse. Who, you know, I for all I know, there could be 100 of these. There could be just the ones I've heard of, but none of it surprises me. So of course this movie exists, and of course this is whatever the listener, whatever you sickos who helped choose this movie are imagining at home.
Yeah,
you've got it. You've got a visual image of what this picture is.
We will do, with your permission, Guy Montgomery, my friend and compadre and fellow adventurer. We'll do 2 minutes and we'll wrap the whole movie summary, like plots. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Our time begins now.
So Bucky Larson is a grocery bagger in a small town supermarket. He immediately gets fired from his job by his kooky manager, who strikes himself in the face under the guise of having a fight. He goes home to his parents. He's upset. He goes to hang out with his friends who figure out he's never masturbated before. They say, we'll teach you how to masturbate. They put a movie on the projector. Really weird. Teaching him how to masturbate. But he doesn't get down to it, because instead he discovers that the stars of the adult film they are watching are none other than his parents. He returns home to tell them as much. No one's weirded out by this.
No, everyone's impressed and happy.
And he says, this is my destiny. I'm born to be a star. I'm going to move to Los Angeles and become a nude film star. He moves to LA. He has a pretty rough go of it initially, but soon meets Christina Ricci?
I don't know. I always thought it was Ricci. I could be wrong.
We'll just call her Christina. She's a waitress at a cafe. She introduces him to Kevin Nealon, who's probably my favorite character in the house, who becomes his flatmate. And it's not long before he goes out on an audition to be in a commercial for Mac and Cheese. He misconstrues the audition as an adult film audition, masturbates in front of them. We discover he's got a micro penis. He goes to a party. The director of the commercial used to be a director for adult films.
You've got so little time left.
How long?
45.
Oh, so they go to an adult film party, a porn party, and he gets bullied. That's when it's revealed he has a micro penis. He meets a director called Miles Deeper. Who gives him his first shot. He ejaculates on the side of some breasts. He becomes an internet sensation, a very niche market for porn, wherein people like seeing his micro penis because it emboldens the men and women in relationships. And he soon becomes a star, falls in love with Christina Ricci, and they wind up together. And that is, in essence,
you've got it.
The film.
It is.
With how long left?
10 seconds.
It's not worth watching.
And honestly, the only bit you missed out is that at the end...
there's a little bit of conflict in the romance.
A tiny bit, like 11 minutes before the film ends. They just have to engineer a little bit of something.
And you were actually excited by that.
Yeah.
Because...
So what happens is Christina Ricci's character is an absolute sweetheart in the film.
No, but almost to the point of something sinister, because... The movie is populated by the the dimmest, most...
But she's a woman.
Yeah.
And in this world, women and men are different species. And women are an absolute subgenre of human.
That's right. And in the species of men, Bucky Larson somehow, just through sheer, idiocy, Nick Swartzen... The premise for this movie is Nick Swartzen and Adam Sandler and Alan Covert, who are the writers, sitting in a room saying, hey, what if Nick played someone who is mentally differently abled, and we make him have really big buck teeth so that he reads to everyone who exists in the world of the movie as fuck ugly.
It's like, you know when you put straws in your mouth when you're at a cafe because your friend needs cheering up and you do a funny voice?
I want to eat your ramen!
Yeah, it's a movie of that.
Yeah.
It's Nick Swartzen doing that for 90 minutes, and they released it in the cinema.
Yeah, but so because of how thick his character is, he reads as a beacon of hope and light, and accordingly to Christina's character is desirable.
Yeah, he's a little injured fawn that she needs to sort of nurse.
Which is just, it's so impossible.
But anyway, she's wholly good, and it's, without exception, she's just this maternal, very lovely character for him who looks after him. And then right near the end, they have sex, spoiler alert, they lose their virginity to each other. And then Christina Ricci in the morning after comes back to the hotel room, and she's like, you know what, Bucky, I think I should go and have sex with other men. You know, we both should get out there and explore the wonders of the world sexually, both of us. So I'm going to go do that. I'm going to bounce. And I cracked the fuck up. So it's just like, I hope this sustains. I know it won't. I know there's some dumb reason for this, but I wish that it was just her going, hey, you know what? I can do better than all this.
I agree. In principle, I love that idea, but I was also upset with myself because I noticed at that time I was, I guess... It's interesting. This is probably one of the few genuinely valuable pieces of research that we've stumbled into by doing what we do. Is that...
What do we do, Guy? How would you describe what we do?
We meet up and we run our friendship and brains into the ground.
Yeah.
By watching either repeatedly one bad movie, or in the instance of Patreon Pals, bad movies at the behest of other people. But I was upset for Bucky Larson because I had spent enough time with him. Like, I don't know. So this is what I'm wondering. I was upset because I think within the movie, the fact that there was some sort of seed of something decent or a relationship was, like, that was the narrative drive that was pushing me through the rest of the mess. Or, alternatively, I was like, I was sympathetic enough towards Bucky that I was upset that he was having his heart broken at this moment. Like, I wish I could have reveled in the fact that finally a character, like, her character specifically had total control over her destiny and was like, this is fucking insane. Absolutely not. But, you know, do you think that watching movies like this or watching movies as we do has dropped...
Sorry, what was the learning there? I will admit on mic that I smoked quite a lot of weed to get through this film. So what was the thing that we discovered?
This is what I'm wondering is I think it's damaged or impacted my ability to...
You've lost the cynicism shield to be able to hide behind when you're watching a movie to go, oh, they're actors and this is shit and this character sucks. You're still invested in some way.
Well, in some way, yeah.
Yeah, you can't help but be invested.
Yeah,
when the character is
but
up
also at the
it.
End of the movie, you were like, because they introduce that conflict and resolve it within probably less than 5 to 10 minutes in a 90-minute movie, and you're like, the pacing is insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But then I was saying, maybe it's not. Maybe like this is normal pacing, and Sex and the City, because that is a movie with crazy pacing, has thrown our entire sense of time off.
Nah, I see other films from time to time. This was fucked.
Yeah,
this was really weird. It did. This is a compliment. It didn't feel very long at all, this, like watching this movie.
No.
There's a lot of ingredients to that, and it's hard to tease out what was the movie.
90-minute runtime's one of them.
What was the weed? It genuinely was a short movie. Hanging out with my boy Guy. I was, you know, lounging in a chair, which is good. Taking a break from some very boring sort of, you know, like office-y work, which is always good. Gives you a bit of time dilution. What's the word I'm looking for? Dilation?
I don't know.
It fucks with the perception of time.
Oh, yeah.
But it just flew by.
It really did.
It fly by for you?
Yeah, it went pretty fast. It was, like, painful to watch. And it was sort of, you know, it's groan-inducing. And you sort of, you're looking around the screen. You're going, oh, come on. But it is, in all honesty, I mean, I don't have a horrible... It is bad enough that it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, it is. Let me bring this up as a weird thing. This is part of a bunch of movies, and I guess media products and people, and this is a whole, like, phenomenon that happens, where it's really bad, and there's so many things in it where you're like, that is absolutely fucked, you can't say that out loud, much less in a movie. But it's so consistent with that opinion that you can't, it's like, you can't reckon with it. It's so wrong in so many ways that you can't, it's kind of the Trump thing, right? You just keep hiffing shit out. And so you sort of, it Trojan horses the entire project into your brain a little bit.
I think it's these sorts of movies exist outside of time and space.
They're or social mores or normality.
It's not worth, honestly, it's inconsequential. It's not worth the time.
That's what it is, eh? It's like to do an efficiency rating on, you know, what's the payoff of trying to dedicate any brain space or time to critiquing this film just seems like a complete fool's errand.
Well, and on that note, I would like to celebrate the performance of Kevin Nealon, who's a funny performer.
Yeah, we've seen him live, I think, in LA. I think he might have been on at the store when we went in.
It's possible. I don't remember that. But his character, everyone else, they kind of... That's what makes.
Oh, by the way, sorry. For those who don't know, what would be a good touchstone for who he plays in the Sandlerverse and some? In Little Nicky, he's oh fuck, who is
he? He's the coach in The Waterboy.
Yeah, that's it. I think
he was a Saturday Night Live member. He's in a lot of the Sandler films.
You know him if you're Sam. He's one of them.
Yeah, but his character, everyone else, it seems to me that they pick and choose when they're really stupid or when they need to be intelligent to move the story forward.
Yeah.
His character, while the character himself is like, you know, has got no, is insane, essentially.
Single-ply toilet paper thin.
Yeah, they play ahead with that line of thing, that character line, like the whole way. So he's a creep, he's really into Christina Ricci.
And he's aggressive. And he just turns up on screen to say, fuck you,
yeah,
to Bucky
he's
Larson.
He's really aggressive to Bucky Larson. And so he's always on the phone, and he's always talking to someone you wouldn't expect him to be. And he always like puts the phone to the side to yell at Bucky Larson, and the things he yells are sort of silly and offensive. So when he moves in, he tells Bucky that he has his own bathroom, which is down the hall. The bathroom in Kevin Nealon's room is for him. It's his private space. It's a sanctuary. And so the next day, Bucky wakes up and he has to go to the toilet, and he opens the door and Kevin Nealon's in there shitting, and he goes, "Fuck you, you fucking psycho." So I thought it was my bathroom. He's like, "No, I can't shit where I shower."
Is it this is, but I shit here.
Yeah. And then anyway, he goes back to the phone. He goes, "Hi, sorry, we've got an intern at the office today." And then another time he walks in while Bucky's pouring himself cereal, and he goes, "Whose cereal is that?" And Bucky goes, "It's mine, I bought it." And he goes, "Whose milk are you going to use?" And he goes, "Can I borrow some of yours?" And he goes, "No!" And then Bucky has to use water. And then the next time, when Bucky has some success in adult porn as an adult film star, he buys a lot of milk and fills up the fridge, which is a funny visual gag.
Yeah.
He looks really pleased with himself. Yeah. He like looks, and this is the thing, is that this movie has enough jokes that a few of them are bound to connect. And he gestures with his eyes towards the fridge, like, "I think you're going to like what you see." And he opens it up, and it's just filled to the hip, packed to the hilt with milk. And he just looks at me, he goes, "Now where the fuck am I supposed to put my grapes?"
And then he calls him insensitive. That's the bit that got me.
And then at the end, there's this weird through line where before Bucky Larson moved in, he was living with John Mayer, who skipped out and owes him 3 months rent. And the last scene in this movie, on what does feel like a clipped ending now I think about it.
Yeah.
After he experiences some success and is reunited with Christina, they move to Iowa, his hometown. He opens Bucky's famous steakhouse and he's serving like a family. Everything's pretty wholesome and normal at this point. And then Kevin Nealon shows up and goes, "You owe me 3 months of rent. This is exactly like John Mayer. Just like John Mayer." And you think, well, this scene's got some space to go somewhere. And then, like, Nick Swardson barrels the camera with his dumb buck teeth.
Yeah, he freaks out. He starts losing his damn mind.
He's one of those sorts of Looney Tunes, like, blackout.
It's called an iris close, where you sort of have like a black circle that comes in to envelop the whole frame. You would see it with Porky Pig.
Yeah, yeah.
He would stick out of the Warner Brothers logo.
That's all, folks.
This is it. So the iris shuts and it just stays.
It shuts around Bucky's mouth.
Stays on his dumb fucking freeze-framed face.
On his buck teeth. And then, so that's the end of the movie, which is jarring enough. And then they've got some pretty solid animator to animate his teeth so that they, like, they extend out from his mouth and the iris close onto the black screen and spell out in cursive writing, "The end."
It's funny. It's so weird and it's funny. I've never seen that before.
Almost, I'm going to put it on Twitter, almost worth watching for the end credit sequence.
Just watch the end credit sequence. You don't need to watch the whole movie.
But that, like,
Do you know what? I didn't like hate this watch. The movie is no good.
Do you know that is in part because, like, the last 2 days we've met up and watched Sex and the City, and so to come over and to watch
I don't know.
I mean,
is it? It's hard to tease out.
It definitely feeds some of it.
Yeah,
because I didn't mind it either. But it's not how I choose to. It is how I choose to spend my time. It's not how I would choose to spend my time.
Oh,
do you feel like you've got control over your time?
No. Not really. No. No, I don't. Which really bums me out. It's mainly because of this podcast.
Yeah, that's the thing.
What I'm doing is I want to have a look at the financial performance of Bucky Larson.
Well, because you asked early on when he first starts.
Oh, man, they made this thing on a song. Budget of 9 mil.
And box office of?
Give me a moment. Man, Nick Swardson, though, eh? Like, what is going on?
Have you watched his Netflix special?
Oh, nah, I haven't.
Do you want to watch it after this?
No.
Yeah, nice.
Unfortunately, I got shit to do because I have to watch Sex and the City every second day, which is really long. I would love to watch that with you, but no. You haven't seen... Oh, my God, the box office was 2.5 mil. This fucking movie lost money on 9 million.
It's not surprising, nuts. Though. You said the first scene where he's being taught to masturbate...
Yeah.
And he starts doing it, and he's, you know, like, Nick Swardson has to commit to these big physical bits. Like, the writing is so paper thin that a lot of the humor from his character lies in his physicality, which is, he's got funny physicality. But, so he's, like, doing this big sort of apish masturbating. And you said, who is this movie for?
Who is this movie for?
It's for stoned, it's for... stoned like 15-year-olds
yeah.
who are also independent of being stoned, who are thick.
Independently wealthy, independently thick stoners who go to the movies. It is a weird one to try and think about who the intended ticket buying audience is going to be.
Is there a time when you would have found this movie funny? Hold on for a second.
Okay. Because it's like, this is a children's movie, kind of. You know, like all the humor is... If you take away the swear words and stuff, the style of humor that's being done is so ridiculous and unsophisticated. It's like a happy meal of comedy. Like, it's so broad and just massive salty, massive yeah. fat. There's no nuance to performance or writing or anything. Everything's so big that it's like a children's movie. But the premise of it is pornography. So they have to have, like, naked breasts in it. So then you kind of, it's not a kid's movie, so then it's no one's film.
It's that early teenage boy market. You know, the first gag in this is a retread of a gag from Road Trip that sort of dorky guy has, where a farmer, they're on the farm in Iowa, and a guy is seen digging his hand into a jar of peanut butter,
yeah,
smearing it presumably on himself and having goats come up and lick it off while he talks to one of his family friends.
I forgot about that. That is how this film introduces itself to the world. Yeah.
It comes into your house, it puts peanut butter on its balls, and it gets a goat to lick them off.
Can I read this to you? Sorry, you were going somewhere.
It's okay. I was just saying, like, do you think, is there a world in which or a time in which you would have enjoyed this movie on its own terms?
I don't think this one. And I am the first person to stick my hand up and say that there's a lot of bad movies that I enjoy, and there's even worse movies that I used to enjoy.
Of course.
You know, when I was in my adolescence. And that's just the facts. We sat down and watched Superbad in Melbourne to unwind at the end of the trip.
It was a really nice thing to do.
It was fucking sweet. I had been awake for a long time. We've been watching the movies, Real Rob season 2 all day. And we got to the end of it, and I had a flight where I had to basically leave the hotel at 5 in the morning. And it was like 10 p.m. I think. So it was like, okay, this is the bit where we go to sleep. And you didn't even say anything. You just chucked on Netflix and you put on Superbad. I was like, hell yeah. That rules.
That was nice. But that
movie's not so bad. But, you know, Van Wilder still enjoyed it. When I watched it recently, I did the litmus test to see, does Tim Batt still enjoy this movie? I think I've got a fucked up brain.
No, but that is steeped in nostalgia.
It is.
If you were introduced to Van Wilder now, it's...
Oh, I couldn't watch it. I don't think I could watch it. I cannot see myself ever enjoying this particular film. It's too dumb.
I'd like to change my guess, and it's impossible to market to this audience, but it's not for sort of 14, 15-year-old teens.
Okay.
It's for 10 or 11-year-olds who find it somehow on like a weird... This is how I would have found it. On like a movies channel that you didn't really know exists that plays kind of bad movies, and you watch it, and the humor is beyond your age bracket. It's beyond your sort of reading comprehension. But it's an approximation of the humor you imagine you're about to grow into. And so you laugh along because you don't know that none of the action.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Another actual jokes are funny. They're all like in the style of jokes you imagine you're about to find funny.
Oh, it's a whole lot of setup, so you're just primed?
Well, I just think it's for pre-adolescent boys who can't get their hands on an actually funny sort of teenage movie, and so you find this and you think it's funny because you don't know any better.
Gotcha.
And that's like Nick Swartzen's entire career. It's pitched at people who don't know that there are funnier people out there.
It's like finding really sort of tepid softcore magazines when you're 12.
Yeah.
Before the internet was around.
Yeah.
It's like, I have access to something here.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I got you. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But you can't, there's no way to market a movie with titties in it.
Did Happy Madison produce this? They must have.
I think so, because the main writing credit was Sandler, wasn't it? He was on top, and then Nick Swartzen and someone else helped out.
And that's the thing.
Which is crazy to me that three people penned this.
He is playing an Adam Sandler archetype, who's like a thick person.
Yeah, but.
But he's got less charisma than Sandler.
He does, and it also came out even later.
Yeah,
still. But so, like in the 90s, Waterboy, it wasn't dicey. It did very well, actually. But I don't remember there being any critique. But 2011, it's like, hey, you
the timing's worse, the actor's worse,
yeah,
the movie's worse.
Everything stinks about it. I am really worried about my own gauge on films, because in committing anything to a recorded medium and publishing it online. Because of how out of line what I'm about to read is with what I said about me kind of not hating watching the movie.
Go ahead.
This is the subheading critical under the Wikipedia page for Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star. Initially not pre-screened for critics, the film was panned by critics on its opening weekend. Review aggregator Rotten Tomatoes reports that all 35 critics who reviewed the film gave negative reviews, bringing the film's rating to a rare 0%.
Incredible.
With an average rating of 1.6 out of 10. And the consensus...
I'd just like to say, you don't need to worry about, you know, your own opinion not holding merit. Film critics have a different job from us.
Yeah.
They're measuring it against, like, some sort of standard.
Do you know what it is as well? I've always got a very childish need to kind of go against the grain. I'm a contrarian at heart.
You are.
I am. So it's like if the movie...
You should have said I'm not.
True. Nice. I am, but I'm not very smart at it. So the movie presents itself as an unabashed piece of shit. And it's like, obviously I'm supposed to hate this.
Yeah.
So I refuse, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to look for any... pixel on screen that I can find.
There is absolutely no surprises to me that all of the critics for if you were separate from doing this podcast, if you wrote a review of this movie,
yeah,
it would not be positive.
It wouldn't be positive, but it's like, I don't know.
It's almost punching down to give it a bad review.
Yeah, this does feel like punching down. But Sandler's on board, so it's not. He knows what he's doing, even though he did lose. What was the math? Like 6.5, 7.5 mil. So it got 0% with the average rating 1.6 out of 10. Consensus calling it, quote, a severely misguided and inept comedy incapable of even telling its single joke properly. That is very well articulated. On Metacritic, the film received a weighted average score of 9 out of 100, meaning overwhelmingly disliked based on reviews from 13 critics, making it the worst reviewed wide release of 2011. It was also given the Moldy Tomato Award for the worst reviewed film of 2011 by Rotten Tomatoes. Orlando Sentinel film critic Roger Moore stated, quote, the concept and the movie that comes from it aren't funny. And second, Swartzen wasn't any more born to be a star than his character. A New York Times critic, A.O. Scott, stated in his review that Bucky Larson, Born to be a Star, was so bad that, quote, it may have been made to console every actor who has ever been in a movie that it is a little less bad than this one. Oh, that is a little less
Why
bad than this one.
Why do you do it to yourself?
Let me put the matter another way. This may be the worst movie Paulie Shore has been in. Think about that. If you dare, go on Netflix and test the hypothesis.
Holy shit. That is Like, what? Yeah.
Paulie Shore's cameo cracked me the fuck up.
Just to see him, I think, was what got you.
It was the announcement of him that got me. So there's a scene where we're at the Adult Film Awards so that we can have a turn in Bucky Larson's career where he becomes critically celebrated in the eyes of the industry giants. He ends up with a clean sweep, 13 awards with the AFAs, taking down the dastardly Dick Shadow, who is the baddie reigning supreme, who never has a moment of victory in the film, but we're supposed to hate him. I mean, he's being a dick, but at no point is he legitimately kind of empowered. But anyway, so that happens, and at the start of that scene, it's got the announcement to welcome the MC on stage. It says, welcome to the 15th AFA Awards. Please welcome to the stage your host, Paulie Shore. And I was like, fuck, yeah, all right.
You'd love to see Paulie Shore getting that offer come across his table.
Oh, my God. It was so funny. It was way funnier than seeing him act in it.
Yeah, the
announcement that you're about to see Paulie Shore in a movie is so funny.
And also, all of the people
me.
In the room are in shock and awe. They gasp at the announcement Paulie Shore's emceeing their awards.
The funny thing is, it's so true to form as well, because I could imagine him hosting the Adult Film Awards.
Hey, Paulie, we got an offer for you here. You're going to play the MC of the Adult Film Awards in a Nick Swartzen vehicle.
Sounds good.
Has he got buck teeth in it? Absolutely. why would, like, Nick Swartzen has feelings. He has a critical gauge.
Yeah.
He's got emotional responses to things that are said about him. How can you put yourself through this? I know no one sets out to make a bad movie, but everyone involved has to know. Like, and this is what shits people about Sandler, because he wrote this, but everyone involved has to know that they're making what is going to be just like fucking picked apart. I guess there's the chance it's going to make money. Maybe it's a tax write-off for Happy Madison. I mean...
Well, I mean, we are famous for saying the same about Grown Ups too, but that made a shitload of money for everyone involved.
Yeah, but that had an all-star cast. The entire marketing vehicle for that movie was, hey, look at the four people we've got on screen together. This was all like B down to F grade, you know, secondary players.
Do you think there's a bracket, though, where this is the Grown Ups of that audience segment? It's kind of like, I don't want to be
audience,
elitist, but kind of a trailer trash bracket of cinema goers who are like, fuck yeah, Paulie Shore's in this movie, I'm in.
I don't even know if he would have been in the trailer, though. The trailer would be all Swartzen. And not like, Nick Swartzen's successful, though, isn't he?
He is. And I would like to see his specials, because I think his stand-up isn't like universally bad.
He used to have a sketch show. I think, yeah, well, like, you know, anyone who's done stand-up for a certain amount of time, they're going to have a few funny jokes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's an interesting thing because it oscillates between the question you're talking about of, are you kind of getting it? Does Nick Swartzen sort of feel, does he take the slings and arrows
just like
that he's
hearing,
himself?
Hearing those reviews, which is like, you know, but it's almost insulting that the journalists have bothered to write them, because it's like, so obviously this movie is bad. So obviously, you know, you'd have to seek it out to want to watch it.
It would be like getting a professional top tier sports reviewer to go to a Little League game and pick apart their technique. No shit, dude. We don't.
But not even
kids.
No. But no.
It's
but
Nick
like,
Swartzen.
There's potential in Little League, so it's not even that. It's like, it's a professional critic to go and grade an amateur social sports league that they don't know that someone's coming to pick apart their technique.
Yeah, like a social club.
Like, to me, this feels like A.O. Scott kicking in the door on Nick Swartzen's bedroom where he's, like, making a movie for his own amusement, and he's like, that movie's a piece of shit.
But you have to... That's just part of the deal. You're putting a movie out in the world with an attempt to make money off it. This is part of the transaction. I don't know what... See, this is the fucking mental gymnastics that it makes you do, because you almost feel painted into a corner to defend it because it is so universally shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a badly written, paced, acted, it's grotesque. The thing that you're saying about Nick Swartzen, this is interesting. He must have really felt the criticism that came out with the reviews, but even in the making of the film, like, he looks hideous on screen, but he's given himself a goofy haircut and the funny buck teeth to almost make the joke at his appearance before anyone else can make it at him. I'm in on it, guys.
There's always a lackey in Sandler. Like, it's Swartzen and Schneider essentially play the same role, only Swartzen seems to, I think, he seems to have better mental health.
Yeah, he's better at being in on it and taking it and using it.
Oh, yeah,
to
but even
advantage.
Putting on the front to do that probably takes its toll.
Oh, it can't not, but if, I don't know, you...
What is Christina Ricci doing in this film?
Now, that's a question.
She is so talented. And
she is, and there's no getting around it. And it's probably because she's surrounded by like comedy actors who don't need to be classically attractive to make it in Hollywood. She is so beautiful. It is crazy how like glowing she is on screen.
If she wasn't in the, like, I honestly think if she wasn't in the film, the film would almost read better. Like, if they got a different, worse actor to play that role in the movie, the movie as a whole would be better because you wouldn't be constantly reminded of the outside world.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm with you on that. But then who would you... Okay, so would you put in, like, a stand-up or something?
Honestly, in terms of acting performance, she's in the movie anyway. She shows up everywhere. She's never given a decent role. Jackie Sandler, Adam Sandler's wife. Just take a... Like...
Yeah,
roll the dice on her as a lead.
She's too good. I would love to see Jackie Sandler starring in something. She's fucking funny.
She's all right, mate.
Now, I think she gets given such dog turds, and I like what
they're
she
all in her.
Does
they're all
them.
In her husband. They're all in her family's movies. Like, why didn't you say I don't want to do that role?
Say that again. What?
Well, like, she has control over what role she says yes to.
Yeah,
Adam Sandler's not making her be in these. She's
no,
like,
I know.
Yeah.
It's the whole fucking Hollywood machine, right? Because she doesn't look like Christina Ricci, which is why she can't get those roles.
She's beautiful. She is
beautiful, but she's like not the same kind of she'll look like she's 19 until the day she dies kind of Christina Ricci anime character face thing, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what these broad Hollywood movies always cast woman leads You can put other women in it, but they, you know, it's so hard to get a leading lady who has a different look that from that like Barbie doll 3D printed thing.
Yeah, I don't. But I mean, I don't think. She, I mean, I haven't seen enough of her body of work to know those. But I don't think Jackie Sandler's
cameos. That Jackie Sandler's fucking hilarious.
I like her in the same way I like any secondary character or cameo character in the movies we watch, in that I don't spend enough time with them to fucking like detest them.
Yeah. Fuck, you're right, man. I'm filling in so much blank
space.
This
entire conversation is trapped between having a total understanding of, you know, the mental deterioration watching these movies does to us and like being oblivious to it and sort of championing them for whatever they're meant to be.
It's a real tightrope because obviously we're doing a podcast series here, so we have to put our voices online up for debate, like listen to what I have to say. I have no faith in my judgment of films at all anymore whatsoever. Worst Idea of All Time podcast has broken my fucking brain irreversibly for film critique. It has done the opposite of what media studies did to me in my final year of high school.
Okay, so you went to the cinema recently.
I did.
So this is just a little experiment. So you went and saw the
Avengers Endgame, yeah.
And so that's a movie that exists separate to the podcast. And you can stop me here, but like, what is your critical analysis without, you know, giving away anything for anyone who might want to watch it? What's your critical analysis of that film?
I find it's a hard one, actually, because I find the Avengers movies really hard to review because I just think they've got so much work to do plot-wise that I kind of forgive a lot of stuff that otherwise...
That is part of a review.
Yeah. I think... There's so much awkward exposition in those films, but no professional film reviewers ever agree with me with that. I think the so much of the dialogue and stuff is so like weird. Like Guardians of the Galaxy is always my favorite one in that whole universe because it had so much fun.
Yeah.
Not the second one, just the first one, because it was so weird and it just embraced it. But all the Avengers ones, I really like them. I enjoy them. I love the epicness of it. But they're so fucking earnest and long and so much plot needs to go on that it's just like... I feel like they don't have enough moments of fun.
That's a sound review. So like, I feel like independent from the podcast and watching movies to talk about for the podcast, you've still got the, you know, the
faculties.
Yeah, absolutely. But what you are doing is when you talk about, when you discuss these things in public.
I put a G in that word. There is none. Faculties.
You are, I mean, you're pushing yourself. It's weight training, isn't it, for the real world? Or is the real world?
I don't know.
Weight training for this.
Like, if someone asked you about this, I guess this is what we're doing right now, so this seems like a weird question. Maybe I'm too high. But if someone just asked you, like, hey, what was Bucky Larson like? You're at a bar with a friend. They're just like, hey, what was that movie like?
Oh, look, it was really bad. But even when I talk to people at bars about movies, they always qualify their question, my opinion, or they, you know, like
within the context of what I do to
movies. And so someone says, hey, what do you think of Baculus? And I say, well, yeah, it was really bad, but, you know, by the standards by the standards of the movies I watch with Tim, like, it was fine. It flew by. Mm. You know, if you buy into the idiocy of it, there's some things that you'll laugh at. But it's objectively a really, really awful movie.
Okay, so let me ask this question then. So let's stop talking about the movie as a movie and let us start talking about the watch in terms of us and Worst Idea, okay?
So the experience we just had in this room together?
Yeah. So I'm saying, like, you don't need to bear in mind other people may take your opinion of how you experience this film compared to their own experience of it, okay? It's not an objective review of the film. I want to talk about your experience of watching it within our pantheon, especially of the Patreon movies that gets hiffed to us. So, like, was this a terrible watch for you?
No.
And why is that?
Because I rode an electric scooter to your house, which was fun, so I was in a good mood. I thought maybe we were watching Sex and the City. I found out we were watching Bucky Larson. I was in a better mood.
I reckon that's a big one.
I sat down in a comfortable chair with my friend Tim. We started watching a movie we both knew was going to be awful, so we could, like, you know, relish and enjoy the moments when it hit. And then if it was bad and we agreed in the ways it was bad, we could look at each other and laugh and make fun of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, all of that is that's all fun. It's a fun thing to do. And then it was only an hour and a half. By the end of it, we went inside, had a coffee, saw your wife, saw your housemate, played with the dog. Like, it's not a bad 3 hours out of my day.
Fucking A. But Sex and the City watches are so...
It's awful.
Yeah. There's something very bad about depriving your brain of new information.
Mm. I mean, even when you said that, my entire mood and outlook shifted.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Your body.
I became in a much darker place.
It's like your soul leaving your body.
But, I mean... You know, it's not what we're doing is it's not fun, but it's not bad.
Yeah, of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. You know, there's people with real problems out there. It just goes. Do you know what it goes to show? Everything is fucking comparative, eh? And you can twist yourself in knots, looking at everyone around you and comparing yourself, your situation to those around you. But you got to kind of like carve your own path a little bit. And just be cool with it.
Mm. Absolutely.
Maybe this is the same with Nick Swardson. Maybe that's what he's doing with his career. It's like...
So hard to do.
I know that everyone, you know, can fucking get their clicks and write their articles on AV Club about what a fucking monster I am and how terrible my movies are.
Not what a monster he is. What an untalented idiot he is.
Yeah, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But not all of his movies lost money, you know? And you just got to keep doing things. I will always, as a person who has produced things and knowing how hard it is to pull something together, I will always have respect implicitly for people who try to put something out in the world. I think that in terms of the spectrum, how we weight our right to criticize something versus celebrating that it exists at all is a little bit off kilter by virtue of social media at the moment.
How far does that generosity extend into the like world of, you know, of cynical movie making and, you know, when there's people...
Things out there need to be critiqued, of course. They need to be reviewed and we need to find out, like, what you're going to like. And also if stuff is just problematic with this, which this movie was. Like, it's just... It represents so many fucking awful things on screen. It deserves to be called out. But I just think there's such a bloodlust and a celebration of shitting on everything at the moment that it's like, it's just, it's such it's a big dark cloud.
I would say everyone gets in response to what you're saying, I agree. I think in defense of this movie.
It's the joy that's generated from shitting on stuff that I object to.
It hasn't set out to... you know, it hasn't missed any of its goals, apart from maybe being a comedy for people to enjoy.
This comedy movie didn't miss any goals except perhaps being funny.
But it didn't set out to do anything except be a dumb fucking movie about Nick Swardson and buck teeth moving to LA to become a porn star.
Yeah, and he got to hang out with Christina Ricci.
I think what bothers you or upsets you is like... is when, you know, critics decide to elevate the platform on which it exists and shoot it down for things that...
It's the joy. We should all be sad when something sucks, but that's not what happens at the moment. Most people are fucking chomping at the bit to relish in something sucking. But wouldn't it be so much nicer if we all took the attitude of like, if as a film critic you went and you didn't go fucking licking your lips going, I'm going to win a Pulitzer for how verbosely I can shit on this thing. You went, I saw a movie and it got finished and it got released to cinemas and unfortunately it was very bad and here's why, and it makes me sad that this movie is shit. I don't fucking, like a pig in the mud, roll around and become, how bad it
you
is.
You should become that film critic. You could sharpen your tools.
It's not attractive though, is it? No one wants
no,
that.
No, but if I just watch the mental decay of a film critic who's constantly taking it personally that movies are bad, that's something I'm interested in. Yeah.
Like you've got skin in the game with every film. You see, like, oh, I'm so sorry to tell you guys, but again, we've got another one that didn't quite hit the mark. Fuck, man. It wouldn't be sustainable, would it?
No, but it would be funny.
It would be funny.
In conclusion, Tim, would you recommend anyone watch this movie?
No, absolutely not. Maybe the scene with Paulie Shore just to hear the announcement, but not. There's no need to see him on screen. That was the funniest bit for me. What about you, Guy?
Absolutely not. Thank you so much to everyone who chose it.
Patreon keeps us going.
Yeah.
You are the team work making the dream work. So thank you so much. And your suggestions are always great and always for different reasons. Like, the fuck was that shit animation one we watched two times ago?
Oh, the Something Kids.
Something Street.
The Christmas one.
Yeah, that was brilliant. And then DC Cab was
brilliant
for a completely different
movie
reason.
Marathon of just the movies that the Patreon pals have made us watch.
We should fucking do it.
No, we've seen
all
of them.
Or we should have, you know what would be cool? I cannot be arsed trying to wrangle this for the rights and stuff, but doing like a film festival where we
the
just
worst
play.
Idea, film festival.
Absolutely.
That's a really funny idea. Well, anyway, thanks so much. Please keep subscribing.
Keep paying us money. It honestly has kept this whole thing afloat. So God bless you guys, man.
And we'll
or
see
whoever.
Yeah,
you know?
We'll see you soon. Jar is a god.
Nick Swardson is...
You don't look like the average porn star.
Oh, yeah, because I'm wearing a sweater.
Bucky Larson.
I've never ridden in a convertible before.
Stand up, feel the breeze.
Holy cow!
Ugh, you got bugs in your teeth.
Oh, it's still moving!
Yeah.
Ow!
Bucky Larson, born to be a star.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.